Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history.
Hi there, gents. It's nice to have you on my show. Patrick and Nordlux, how are you guys doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
I'm almost good, and thank you for the invitation.
It's a pleasure to have both of you here. So, we got a bunch of things to dive into. The first one that I want to touch on is Nordlux. Many months ago, when this stupid COVID nonsense started, and we were all wondering what the hell is this and what does it mean, you went and did a whole bunch of studying of scientific literature, especially from Europe, and you said some things, and I think your predictions have proven to be true. Maybe you can just take us through some of that.
Well, my predictions were that, from the official scientific magazines that they published and they stopped to publish, basically I made the conclusions that the test that they're doing, and this is according to the Chinese scientific research, by the way. I could send links if you want to post them under the podcast. So I made the conclusions that the tests are around 80% unreliable, and they had the tendency to test people false positive. So this is obviously with the tendency to create more cases, right? Now, we don't know if they're still using the same procedure of testing, but most likely they're testing with the same procedure. The other thing is that the virus, even back in, I believe we spoke about that in March that year.
Yes.
The virus is not obeying any laws of nature, not the chemical laws, not the laws of physics, not the laws of biology. Now, as I told you, I've studied biology in, there was a quite, the old Bulgarian system was quite good before they destroyed it. And I pointed out that basically these kind of flu viruses, because basically this is a type of flu virus, they're not stable because the cover of the virus is basically fat acids. The fat acids, they're not stable under the sun. They're not stable in very cold weather. They're not very stable in very hot weather. And overall, they're not stable. Now, okay, we and I predicted that if this bullshit is not ended, if I remember correctly, until the summer, then most likely they're using this thing, and there is a lot of shenanigans that are going on. And I'm right. I will point out that our geniuses in Bulgaria, the Corona virus crisis team, or whatever they named, they basically said that the sun and the hot weather will not stop the virus, but then they basically forced the owners of different kind of restaurants and hotels to use a special type of ultraviolet lamps. And what the ultraviolet lamps are doing, basically they're doing the job of the sun.
Yes.
So if a small ultraviolet lamp could protect you from coronavirus, why not the sun?
Yes.
And this is quite funny. And the other thing is that from the official statistics of the Bulgarian basically data centers for the mortality rates with the comparison of 2019 comparison with 2020, the mortality rate in Bulgaria in the first few months of 2019 were much higher than in 2020. Then the summer are plus minus the same, maybe a little bit higher than 2019, but basically no difference really. And then something happened, which I could speculate what happened. And after I believe October, they're skyrocketing. The number of cases skyrocketing and the number of deaths are skyrocketing. Now, there is something fishy about this thing because, and some people also notice it because there is, how to say, there was a not a gradual rising of the cases as you can expect. It's a basically, most of the Bulgarians didn't take it really seriously. And they didn't proceed quite a lot. They didn't practice a lot of the measures that were, how to say, advised by World Health Organization. And except of wearing of masks, right? I mean, they forced you to wear masks in all places.
Yeah.
But it looks like our commies here may be twisting the numbers, because as a friend of mine noticed, there are several things. First of all, there are so-called dead souls. So basically people that were kept alive, so to say, for the election frauds like they did in America. According to the numbers, there were, according to some suggestions, there are around 500,000 people that are not living in Bulgaria. They're either dead or migrated, and they could kill them, so to say, in the name of the Corona Morona scare, because in Bulgaria there were very low mortality from Corona. There were very few cases, but they want to enforce vaccinations. And more in the present day, the Minister of Health is basically saying that he needs 70-75% of vaccination. They cannot, and for now, the vaccination is basically, it's not, it won't be forced, at least they're saying so. So they need to scare the public. And of course, there's another thing. You can find, oh, I forgot the name of the doctor, but a Bulgarian pathologist, if you Google Bulgarian pathologist talking about corona, you'll find a quite famous Bulgarian doctor talking, he's pathologist, talking that in Bulgaria, there is basically 7 cases of pathological, how to say, exams of victims of coronavirus. And in the 7 cases, they considered that the course of death is different from coronavirus. But the people are scared, including the pathologists, so they decided not to create more pathological exams. So basically, you can write every single man that will die in the future like a victim of coronavirus. So you have tests that are not reliable, and also they're quite dangerous because they're quite painful, especially these PCR tests. You have a propaganda machine that is spreading this info about the case, and they're exaggerating the numbers, enormously exaggerating the numbers. As I mentioned before, there could be 80% mistake, like false positive from the PCR test. But also the counter-propaganda of the media says that actually the number of cases must be much, much higher. Because a lot of people, because a lot of people are not going to the hospitals. They're taking care about for the dangerous coronavirus in their homes. So if the number of deaths are, the number of cases are much higher, why the deaths are not much higher? I mean, it's ridiculous. And also, if you look at the data of different countries, there's quite strange things, like Sweden, for example, had something like 20,000 more cases of coronavirus compared to, I'm taking about Sweden because more or less the same size like Bulgaria. And the guys from the Nordic Resistance, they're quite critical about the Swedish health system, and it looks like the Bulgarian, at least the number of beds in the hospital, something like four times more than the Swedes, but because they are built in a different way, they have a more preventive care in the case of Sweden, by the way. But in the case of deaths of coronavirus, they had only 1/4 of the case of the deaths of Bulgaria, and in Great Britain, they had more deaths and more cases of coronavirus than Russia, which wow. is, I don't know, I mean, very, very, very fishy thing. Compare that Russians, yes. Russians had population, and everything, it looks like the number of cases is related to the number of tests, and the deaths are related to basically anything, because the cause of death could be everything. And wow. that's why I pointed out in the previous podcast that Italy, in 3 years, I believe it was, the study was from 2013, 14, and 17, they had something like a combined number of 70,000 cases of deaths from flu. Now, the deaths of flu in Italy is high because the Italians live long life. They had quite a lot of long living population, quite elderly people there. And honestly, if you die from supposedly coronavirus or flu, which is more or less the same, I'm sorry, on the age of 86, or live 1 or 2 years more, and live and die on the age of 88, let's say, what is the difference? I mean, obviously there is some difference for the statistics, but generally speaking, this is obviously media propaganda and exaggerations. So, and also, let's point out that a lot of famous personalities, like politics, like movie stars, they got the coronavirus very early on. I mean, the population in the world was something like 0.2% infected, or even less, and most of the famous personalities, like, what was this, Prince Charles, this degenerate, and the other scumbags, I mean, who got the coronavirus? I mean, all these famous personalities, they were infected with the coronavirus very early on.
That's a good point.
And what is the logical conclusion? That they are trying to spread the fear-mongering. That actually this makes the corona panic more real. And of course, my logical conclusion after 9 months is that, yes, maybe there is a virus. The virus most likely existed around for a very long time before the supposed spreading from China. There was article from the Spanish press that I could bring out that the virus was found, the trace of the virus was found in the sewers of Barcelona, and the probes were dated back to November or October, I believe it was November 2019.
Okay.
Now, also, they dated back a trace of coronavirus from Paris. And also, these come with a very severe cases of flu that was spreading in Bulgaria, in Germany, in most of Europe. So my question is that maybe we are not... The problem with this thing is combined between... panic from the press, from the Lügenpresse, things of the Jews, of course, the would say, the planning of the Jewish globalists that were basically banning people like us from any kind of media, and they basically equals, at least in some country, criticism against the corona panic is equals Holocaust denying, which must tell you something. and of course, what are the consequences of the vaccine? And also, I will make another prediction, which are kind of frightening. They could bring us something real. Now, I'm not sure. I'm still not sure, because for me, this is a continuation, like a real training of the globalists with global social, I'd say, social
engineering.
This is continuation of event one that happened in, I believe it was in October 2019. Of course, coincidentally, the Wuhan, in Wuhan, there was some military games, and the motto of the games, the slogan of the games, were basically some fish called Bing, which means a soldier, and the motto was basically a spreading the peace all around the world, which is kind of strange for a Chinese soldier, Chinese Bing. And of course, the same date was the Jewish holiday called Sukkot, which, if I remember correctly, the time of when I've read it, is basically some kind of basically a changing your behavior from egoistic to basically they describe some kind of communist Jewish holiday that everyone must share, and they must change their worldview. You can look at this Jewish holiday called Sukkot. So tell me if this conspiracy, and of course there are a lot of leaks, including some guys from Bulgaria discovered a lot of interesting things, like basically books written decades ago that predicted this pandemic. There was French comics Asterix, if you know the
yes,
character,
yes.
That was written, I believe, in 2018, and he was competing with the Romans in Italy, and he was racing with coronavirus. No joke. You can.
I've seen that comic.
So basically, I don't know. It's a very fishy Jewish story. Unfortunately, they're scaring the people. I had old parents that I'm taking care of, and they are quite afraid. Even though I'm trying to, red pill them, but they are watching TV. If you are watching TV, you're scared.
If I may chime in just real quick about this, about Corona in my country, is basically what's happening is over here is what I believe. By the way, I think there's a little echo for some reason. It's on my side.
I can also hear the echo, but it's the first time I've heard it. Maybe it's from your end. Otherwise, we can just get...
It's from my end.
It's gone away now. It's got. Oh, hold on.
Okay.
I heard a little bit. But carry on.
I didn't mean to, you know, break up your... What I see over here in my area is that they're not enforcing the mask except for, like, certain thrift stores, a couple other places, but they're not really enforcing the mask. They're kind of, you know, when you enter Walmart or when you go into public places, some of the people will hand you a mask. But in my area, it's not mandatory. But personally, what I think, and I'm pretty sure the data will show, is that in many cases, like in hospitals, I think they're using this to try to get money from the state. They're kind of inflating their sort of their, you know, saying that their ICU or their is in max capacity. It's when you look at like who most of the patients are in the hospitals, it's mostly older people. It's mostly people that have been diagnosed maybe with the flu and they're dying from this, which is not rare. A lot of old people like die from the flu on a sort of yearly basis. Not very uncommon. So what they do is I think a lot of these hospitals are milking the system for money. They're because a lot of the area where I live is rural and they require like they don't get a lot of funding. So I think this is really just a excuse in many cases for funding for the hospitals. Now as far as like hysteria, it seems like everyone has like you've mentioned this social engineering, everyone's like is just wearing the mask and not even thinking about it. They're not even like contemplating could this be, you know, nothing more than kind of hysteria, or is it a reality? Problem over here is that we can't get reliable scientists that are not politically influenced. You know, you can't find any kind of honest academic anymore in any of our institutions. So we live kind of in a post-truth society where like no information is really flowing that's reliable. You don't know if the news is reliable. You don't know. So we're in doubt like everywhere in America because so much information, you know, disseminates and flows about COVID, et cetera. We don't know like what is the truth.
That is excellent stuff there, Patrick. I've got some notes of my own from here in South Africa. So let me add in from my viewpoint. Just something from the last time we spoke when we were looking at Italy and COVID. A German friend of mine pointed out to me that something, you remember when they were saying, oh, all those people are dying in Italy from COVID, it's killing the Italians. A German friend of mine who's traveled to Europe quite often, he said to me that one of the things they're not telling you is that there are a lot of Chinese people living in the north of Italy. So
I didn't know that.
Yes, you don't hear it anywhere, and the Chinese and the Asians seem to be more susceptible to this anyway than whites and blacks. On my website, I published a number of studies, including from Britain, where the supposed death rate of blacks was twice as much. For every one white who died apparently from COVID, two blacks were dying. And I will tell you, here in South Africa, we've got some Asians, some Indians, and some Chinese here. The Indians and the Chinese went crazy over this COVID thing. And I'm not kidding you when I tell you, I went to, I go and get some certain things from the Chinese mall, certain things like solar stuff and so forth, because I do some solar of my own. Because you need to start providing for yourself, okay? So solar power is something I do. And I went to the Chinese mall a couple of months ago on more than one occasion, and I'm not kidding you. Somewhere on my phone, I took film footage of what I would call a Chinese astronaut. And he was, I think he's the owner of a big shop. And you go into that shop, everyone's wearing masks. This Chinese guy's got a proper freaking respirator, you know, like the respirators from like World War One, World War Two. I'm talking a serious fucking respirator, okay? Not only that, I must maybe find the pictures for you. You guys will laugh your asses off. He not only had a fucking respirator, okay, but he was dressed in plastic. He had like plastic over his whole body. From top to fucking bottom. And
he was
and
laminated.
I'm not joking with you. And I was enjoying it. Like you would think, you know, when I looked at these things, And, you know, like Adolf Hitler and World War One, you know, mustard gas, you know, when you really try to kill people, okay? Like when white people really go and they really do dangerous things and they really actually kill people. You know, this guy was dressed like he was ready to go into World War One, okay? And I went there multiple occasions, from top to fucking bottom, in fucking plastic, in everything, the whole day. I mean, he's like that all the time. And and I would just smile to myself. Do you know what I do with my stupid mask as well? Because I hate these fucking masks, and I hate anything that impedes my oxygen flow. I take this silly mask. I wear one of these silly blue masks. And what I do is I was looking at ways of trying to – because I just take my vitamins and stuff like normal. We'd said this isn't going to be much, right? And it wasn't much. We were dead right about everything. Anyway, so what I did was at a point I was trying to like make holes in my mask to improve my breathing. And then I hit on the idea one day – because my mask was also fogging up my glasses. And then I decided, let me just pull the mask down so that my nose, so that it's below my nose, and I breathe completely normally through my nose. Then it's just my mouth that's closed. And I walk around like that everywhere. And then on very rare occasions, then somebody will say to me, hey, you must cover your nose. Meanwhile, otherwise...
Do you guys have the phenomenon over there, Jan, where you have like women, nosy women, that go and say, oh, you got to wear a mask?
No, we didn't have nosy women, but we had a couple of blacks in some places. One or two. It happened to me maybe two or three times out of many dozens of times.
We call them Karens over here. I was just wondering if you guys have it over there.
No, okay, we don't quite have that. So man, I was like, so then I'm like walking around, I'm breathing in whatever fucking germs are there. I'm breathing it in full on, and I'm absolutely fine. And man, I was just laughing at this thing, and that was because we'd said up front, this is nothing. There's nothing to this thing, but. Nordlux, you make an excellent point about the famous people, all the famous people who got, who apparently got COVID, even though hardly anyone on the planet had it. That's actually a brilliant point there. That was all manufactured as well. You know, wasn't it Boris, who's that idiot, the clown who runs Britain? Didn't he also have COVID and everybody?
Boris Johnson. Yeah.
Yes, the freaking clown show. With regard to what you were saying, Patrick, about COVID and just exploiting the whole thing, now that people are traveling a bit in South Africa, and I've got friends also crossing the border and so forth, the testing of COVID is so expensive. For us, it's expensive. For you, it won't be that expensive. For you, it's maybe like let me just quickly calculate it. Let's quickly some division here. a simple COVID test. Pardon me. A simple COVID test for going across the border is about $56. But all that they do is they like swab your mouth, or they swab you, and they stick a swab up your nose, and then you wait like 2 days for the test results, and that's like $56, which for us is quite a lot of money, eh? And we're looking at these things, and you know, it's for this silly little test, and they are forcing these things down on people. And it just looks like it's just a money making scam. But I think it's reached, I think in the US it's in a whole level of its own. When we went on to lockdown, it was winter. So our winter is your summer, and in our winter, they later at the end of the winter, they said that for the first time in I don't know how many years and years, we didn't have a flu season. Our flu season had disappeared, but we had a COVID season, just like you guys, just like you guys have seen. And then it was like we were in lockdown. We were in quite hectic lockdown, say. The initial lockdown, you couldn't go outside your house. You couldn't even go to buy certain things. The government said that you could only buy food. And you had to go back to your house and like you can't be outside, you can't walk around outside your house. You can't even go to exercise. We weren't allowed to do that for weeks. I hated that. Some of us were busy breaking the law, but let's not go into that. And we had quite an intense lockdown. Then eventually, after several weeks, they like allowed us to exercise a bit and so forth. We had a very fucking intense lockdown, and it took a long time for them to lower the thing. But it reached the point where eventually nobody really cared. I've even had blacks say to me, "Why don't we just let the people die from COVID? It's better than all this other stuff." People, even the blacks, were starting to say, "This is so stupid. You know, why are we doing this? Nobody's dying." You know, so I'll tell you something else, Nordlux. Something that you're saying about this thing does not behave the way a virus actually behaves. Is my understanding with a virus when it comes out is that you've got to develop immunity to this thing, and it takes some time, and that when you become more immune to it, then it's not a hassle anymore. And they were talking about all this herd immunity, etc. So I figured, well, and then one day I was at my dentist, and my dentist, his brother, he's a Boer, his brother is a doctor, and my dentist was saying, "You do realize that COVID's going to be here forever, you know, that it's that it's not like going to go away next year." You know, and then he said, at what point do we become immune to this? Because we have to become immune to this, right? And he said, you know, do we have to get ill? Maybe we have to get ill before we get immunity. And then sometime later, I see them saying, "Oh, there's a second wave coming, and it's more dangerous than the first wave."
Of course.
And I'm like, hold on, that does not make sense. How can the second wave be more dangerous than the first wave? Well, you know, which just plays into what you guys are saying about the whole thing is just total contrived rubbish. And my final thing I want to mention to you about COVID is I'm like looking at photos of people around the world, including American presidents and top people in Congress and military people, and everybody's walking around everywhere with masks, okay? And you know what is the thing that like freaks me out the most is prior to COVID, we have never in our lifetime, nor have our parents or grandparents, except the people who were in trenches in World War I, other than Adolf Hitler and the people in the trenches, never at any time have any of us ever worn masks. And yet, look around you, and it's like it came out of nowhere, and it's like it's the most normal thing on earth. Nobody told we a year ago we'd never have conceived of this, and yet everybody is wearing it as if it's totally normal, and it's for something that has hardly killed anybody. And we're acting like this is just completely normal. And for me, that fact that everybody, and in South Africa, by the way, if you go in public places, it's law to wear a mask. It's law. The shops and businesses and everything does not allow you in. You can't walk into the courtrooms or nothing without a mask on. So, and everybody's walking around like this is natural, like we've been doing it our whole lives, etc. And yet, just less than a year ago, we'd never done this in our entire life. How is it that all of us have suddenly overnight found ourselves wearing masks when this was something that's never happened before? And everybody's acting like it's normal.
It kind of shows you how susceptible people are to behavioral modification through the media. Like it's the, you know, you'd be surprised how malleable people are. So I kind of understand it a little bit because if they do the same thing at like companies when they study people's behavior and see if like certain kind of marketing works with people, and the media has much more pull than people give it credit. So that's the only thing I can attribute it to.
And the fact that everybody has advocated this stupid solution and every government has implemented this stupid solution, that for me is just,
yeah.
Of course, as Nordlux would say, the Jews are there, but it's insane how well they've conditioned the entire planet just like that. And that includes Africa, which normally is out of touch with all other reality anyway. Even in other parts of Africa, the people are walking around with masks on. it's just insane. So, yeah. Anything else about COVID?
I have some thoughts. I mean, first of all, well, the same bullshit here. I mean, the trends, our commies here, they're following the trends that are sent from the master commies, the master Jews from the EU.
The Bolsheviks.
But the Bolsheviks. No, they're not really Bolsheviks in the EU.
The Jewish Bolsheviks, I mean.
They are some kind of weird bunch of Maoists and also a very fringe group of cultural Marxists and all kind of degenerates. I mean, it's just ridiculous. But what they're saying, for example, in the beginning of October, when this strange skyrocketing of the cases, especially of the dead cases, happened in Bulgaria. Let's say skyrocketing, we had something like for the whole year, we had something like, I believe, 200 death cases that are very fishy. And then just boom, for 1 month, for 2 months, basically, we have 1,000 cases.
Wow, so
very,
weird.
Very, very strange. But this is with the first news that the vaccine is ready and that they're looking at. It was a very interesting period because they were making a different, and why the Bulgarian government is making these basically data researches. They, basically, one of the things that was interesting that something like 60% of the Bulgarians don't believe the official data that published in the media, or at least they said that they don't believe at 100%. Some people believe that is massively exaggerated. Some people believe that's total bullshit. Of course, there are some very over the top conspiracy theories like David Icke type stuff.
David Icke.
And of course 5G and other things.
Yes.
But most of the people don't believe that. The other interesting data was that, and I've noticed that already, that according to another data research or whatever is called in English, 85% of the Bulgarians would vote for Trump if there was elections for Trump in Bulgaria. So it was kind of fringe for me, but one of the reasons that they pointed out, because he was against, or he pretended to be against, vaccinations.
Nice.
And this calls obviously the government to use, I don't know what they're doing really, what tricks are doing with the numbers, but this calls the government basically to create these cases. So I don't know, for one period of time you have less cases than Sweden, like both infected and dead cases. And for 2 months, basically, you have the top dead cases in Europe.
Well,
very strange. Very strange.
A supporter of mine in Spain was telling me about a discussion she had, I'm not sure if it was with police, some months ago. And the police, I think it was police, said to her that they'd been instructed that literally every death... every death that they don't know what the cause is, they must attribute it to COVID. Something like that. If they go and they pick up a dead body somewhere, then the death, the cause is COVID. End of story. Something like that. There's weird stuff going on. And by the way, before I forget about the vaccine, I've seen that even that there's been statements that the vaccine, they say it will have unknown effects on the fertility of women. And I must tell you, I'd say stay the hell away from any vaccine. I'm not letting anybody
that's
touch me.
That's got me questioning it.
I'm telling you.
That's got me questioning it.
The whole vaccine thing, I'm not normally like really heavy anti-vaccine, but you know, a vaccine that's been created in a very short space of time, and now they want to rush it down on everybody. I'm like, no.
I bet you they want to gear that towards people that have certain types of political beliefs.
I would agree with you. Whites should stay away from this fucking stuff.
Definitely. White women should stay away from it, especially within childbearing age. Should stay away from it.
But I think even men, you don't know. There was something I did put up a video from a an American general who Stubblebine. And this American general did a video quite a long time ago. He used to be the head of intelligence or military intelligence in the USA. And he actually did a video where he spoke about how, I think it was an Israeli company or something, managed to make, I think it's 3 million women in Malaysia or the Philippines infertile. And they do that
all the time to the Ethiopian populations, the Ethiopian Jews populations. They do that all the time. They interjected them, I think, with radiation. So they do that on their own population all the time. Just imagine what they'll do probably on, well, I shouldn't say their own population, but they do that they use people in Israel as guinea pigs all the time. So we should be weary of anything that's coming out of Israel.
I'm telling you, I look at these things and I just say, stay the hell away from it. Like Georgi says, you know, all this panic, and they're bringing you a solution while you're in a state of panic. That's stay the hell away from that, man.
News from the European Union, basically very fresh thing, several hours old. There was a large scale cyber attack against the European Medicine Agency, which just approved the Pfizer and BioNTech vaccine. And according to them, basically some guys hacked them and smashed their files and things like that. Interestingly enough, the symbol of this European mess is basically the all-seeing eye. Just saying. I don't know. Can I send you where I can send links here?
In the chat. In the chat. There's a chat.
Okay, look at this thing. And also there is another interesting thing, is that the Brits are the first people that approved the Pfizer vaccine. And then, just several hours later, the British Health Ministry came with the decision that the vaccine is basically 100% banned from people with heavy allergies. So there is some shenanigans going on, and there is a heavy reactions against the vaccine, I think.
Oh,
and
wow.
Of course, I'm quite interested in this cyber attack, because these bastards will use it in EU to tightening up the cyber security measures or whatever they're telling that. So
But people, look, this COVID thing's also stirred up people. Somebody showed me a video of people in London chanting and saying, you know, shove the mask up your ass or something like that. People are very, very unhappy about it. And I like that. I think COVID has done a lot of good in certain ways. Same here, yeah. But, you know, it's made people more skeptical about people who were not skeptical before about life. I think COVID has done a lot to make many people more skeptical, including of course doctors and nurses and scientists who've who've never come out in public before. Suddenly everyone's coming out and saying, "Hey, but this is weird and that doesn't make sense," and so on.
Are there any doctors coming out and actually saying anything about COVID? Because over here, it's kind of, we're in the dark. Like every medical professional I talk to, they tell me, I ask them, like, you know, what's the ICU look like and, you know, where you're working? And they tell me that it's mostly old people and maybe with people with comorbidities are getting admitted to ICUs. So it's like it's hard to get good information on the ground level and in the news level, and to know that if they're conveying good information.
All I can say from my point of view is the number of people that I've – because one of the questions I had earlier this year was, how many people are we going to know who's gotten COVID, and – do we, will we ever know anyone who's died of it? And I can answer now, in the entire year, only one of my supporters in New York has told me that she had COVID. And I know of only one guy in South Africa who's had COVID, a guy that I know. And other than those two people, those are the only two people that I know who had COVID. And the guy in South Africa, he just went to his doctor and got some sort of flu medicine, but a little bit more than normal flu medicine. And he went through his course and he was fine. By the way, his boss, who is a black guy, aged about 60, he ended up in ICU. but other than that, and I know 80-year-olds and 70-year-olds who we thought would get sick, and nobody got sick. So you know.
Can I bring an old article from 18th of March 2020 about the victims of coronavirus in Italy? So basically, the 99% of those who died from virus had other illnesses, Italy says.
Yes.
And this is part of the Bloomberg. I believe they also showed up what is the average age of the coronavirus victims, and it was something like 80.
Yes.
80 plus. Ah, the average age of those who died from the virus in Italy is 79.5.
There you go. So this thing has turned out exactly as we thought, that this is much ado about nothing and lots of very weird, creepy stuff to do with it. So, yeah. Well, if there's nothing more on Corona, then we can move on to some other topics. But it has stirred up people, and I'm liking anything that angers people, outrages people, stirs people up, because businesses have gone bankrupt, businesses have closed, people have lost their jobs. I've been told here in South Africa, people have lost their houses. The financial impact has been very massive. They've had to drop interest rates and all that, but that is the stuff that stirs people up, and then people are starting to ask the question, you know, was this really needed? The South African government carries on like we're on the edge of World War III. Well, you see, we got to do this and got to do that. Do you know they even stopped us from buying certain kinds of clothes? They made it like illegal. If you go to a clothing shop, you can only buy this and this and this and this. You're not allowed to buy that. They went to town on the rules for coronavirus in South Africa. Like you can't believe. You'd think we were living in World War III, but you know, much ado about nothing. Much ado about nothing. Hmm. So, Mr. Patrick, you had some things you wanted to say about state secession, and also let's talk election in the USA before we get to Russia. We need to try and get to Russia today. So, fire away.
Now, I'll admit, I have not been following the election. I haven't been too concerned, actually, about, and I haven't been monitoring it diligently. But from what I read and from what I've seen is that there's a couple states that are joining together, a couple southern states that don't like sort of the results that has occurred in Georgia. Because as you know, Georgia now, as the demographics are changing, and it's shifting from a more kind of white southern state to a more kind of a black-controlled government, mainly coming from Atlanta. So there's kind of a divide there in Georgia, and like there's a like there even South Dakota is one of the few like non-southern states that's joining in. I think with Kentucky, there's Tennessee, maybe some other, like Alabama. They're all getting together and they're suing or bringing to court a case against like the vote of the election fraud they believe in Georgia. And what's odd about this is that in Georgia itself, there's people bringing a lawsuit against Georgia. So it appears that there's a type of this election's going to be contested everywhere. Like everywhere is like there's no one can make a final decision about the election. So it appears that it's kind of a you know, it's a hung jury. Like no one can make a definitive sort of case for any of these elections. So these elections are getting contested now by individual states, and there's even talks about these states wanting to secede. You know, they're saying that if these elections are, you know, rigged and if there's like problems with the progress of democracy, why not just secede on your own and like start, you know, having kind of like a secession from, you know, the Republic. So, I mean,
yeah.
Currently going on in the United States.
This,
from what I heard, and this is good news to me. This is good news to me because I've been waiting for this. Because what's interesting about this is also if you study kind of the civil wars, you know, worldwide, the Spanish Civil War, I believe, was over a rigged election. It was over an election that was between the sort of like right wing and anarchist and et cetera, from what I understand. So this is a good indication that things might be heating up in America. I don't know for sure, though. You never can tell.
This is interesting hearing from you because I've focused on monitoring the election because I wanted to see that Trump would come in. I know that Trump's been a disappointment to everybody, but I still regard him as better than the Democrats. And so I followed this quite a bit as best I could from my sources and contacts, and I've followed it very closely and published a lot on it. And I'm actually very concerned. It looks to me like Trump is definitely he's weakening, and his lawsuits haven't been working. And it's like he had a plan B, but he didn't have a plan C. And now it looks, and I'm not liking some of the noises coming from him. It looks to me like he's actually gonna let these guys walk all over him. And what you are saying about the secession, that is new to me. I've not heard of that. I will dig a bit more and ask people. That would be good if people take it that seriously. Because one poll that I was looking at, because I was trying to figure out, you know, what's good, what's bad. And then I was looking at Rasmussen polls. And Rasmussen did a poll on how many people believe the election was rigged. And they said that 47% of Americans believe the election was rigged. And of them, 30% were very firm on that belief. So for me, that was like another COVID type of red pill that people should be freaked out. Because my understanding is that Trump actually won by a landslide. Is that your view? from what
you... That's not my view, actually. That's not my view. That's not my view. I don't believe that it was a landslide. I don't agree with that. No, I don't think it was a landslide because I think he lost a good traction with white working class people in places like, you know, the Midwest. I believe he lost a bit of ground there. But I do believe that he definitely won. He probably won not by a landslide, but probably like last election. Not so sure about the popular vote either. I can't really say. I haven't really been paying attention to this election, but I do think he lost a bit of ground when it came to white working class people.
Did you take part in the election? Did you vote? Alex Linder and I never bother voting.
No, I did not. I pretty much I voted last election, but this election I said forget it. I'm just not interested. Doesn't make any difference either way.
I understand where you're coming from. Trust me, I understand where you're coming from.
It's like what the late Tom Metzger said. It's like what the late Tom Metzger said. He said if legal was effective, if like voting was effective, they'd make it illegal. You know, it's...
I understand. You know, eventually we go there, and I'm with you because down the path, Alex Linder and I have spoken, and on the shows we've said, I've even said that even before this rigged election, I've said that Donald Trump is proof that voting doesn't work because
Besides, John, I don't think that voting will solve the demographic problem in America. I mean, I don't think it's going to solve the, you know, white people having more children or the fact that whites are getting displaced dispossessed. I don't think that's going to help.
Dead on. You know, I think all of us are looking for game changers, and the only game changer that I see in town is.
We can't talk about it on this.
Absolutely.
On this.
Maybe not that game changer, but there are other game changers that are like political and racial. You know, a white unity, national socialism. Those are the game changers I see. Whites standing together as a race. You know, that's the only game changer in town.
Which unfortunately in America, it's very hard to do because people are so individualistic. It's hard to get like white activists or white advocates to stand together. Like I think they would stand together on the COVID and the election thing, but trying to get them to stand together on anything else to even put up any kind of like even financial resistance to the kind of censorship that's going on with And they have heightened up the censorship now with white people. It's just they've stigmatized these like white advocacy so much you just can't do it without facing any kind of legal or financial repercussions. It's not so much like it's different in this country. In this country, they'll just go lawfare. They'll go total lawfare on you and pretty much stigmatize you too in the media and make a pariah. And the big thing they do now is doxing people. They got these literal these people that stand on notice and they'll dox you. And I think they're also, I believe in some cases, they're even like sending like federal agents to people's house, you know, for like even talking about the virus thing and the vaccine thing. I think that there's been a couple cases of that. Just to bring the COVID thing back up, if I'm not mistaken, I think some of that stuff has happened. So it's like it's almost the Eastern year. It's like Eastern Germany now in America. Everybody's a snitch on one another.
Wow. Well, you see, in South Africa also, because South Africa's been a very capitalist state. Jewish capitalism ran rampant here. You also struggle with people trying to get away from that individualism, but hardship will fix that. You know, hardship forces people together. And if they're not, And it's just going to be more hardship is going to be needed until whites eventually learn to stick together. So I'm an accelerationist like you. I believe worse is better. Go over the cliff. You know, let's race.
That's
over
a dirty
the
word now, Jan. That's a dirty word in these circles now. They call you okay. And a lot of it is like these P. I don't want to like say anything anybody in particular, but. There's some people that still believe in this like fake patriotism. They can channel the patriotism of like America, and this they can channel it to type to get a voter to get a wide base. What I've discovered is most of these people that are like doing this, they don't have any plan. They just do this because it sounds good to people and it generates you some income and gets you some notoriety out there. About like kind of their own narcissism than actually helping white people or wanting to protect white people is what I discovered. It's a real big problem in some of these circles.
Well, these are probably like the what Alex Linder would call the vote fags, and let them believe that stuff, because I think this election is going to fix a lot of that.
I hope so.
I am picking up from my normal contacts and other website owners, I am picking up a lot more outrage than I've seen before. And I noticed like the guy who runs Brightian, he even went and started a news website. He's actually become quite rebellious. And I'm glad to see more rebellion, but the rebellion is coming from website owners and, you know, small groups like us. That is where the rebellion is coming from. And I like that because anger, outrage, etc., that's the only thing that's going to work for us.
It's about time. It's about time that people get outraged at what's going on here, because, you know, we don't have any advocacy in the courts. We can't organize. I mean, we literally cannot organize any and advocate for ourselves at all. Like any kind of organization, even if it's mild and milquetoast, and that's what people don't understand, is that it doesn't matter how milquetoast you are about this thing. You know, I just want white people to exist. America, they're going to squash any kind of dissent at all, even if it's like inferred for white civil rights. It's just that's the condition of America. We've been fighting that for how long? We've been fighting that since Rockwell's time, and we're doing that now in America at the modern era. And the ACLU won't defend you. Any of these supposed groups that are supposed to, you know, for your freedom of speech and for your advocacy, they won't support you. They won't support you at all. But they will, however, support the fight against you. Like, they will support the fight against you as soon as – like somebody brings like a civil suit against you. So it's very, very tedious, but I hope we're like moving forward, and I hope people do get outraged at this election fraud and even the COVID stuff, and see that there is like quite a bit of social engineering in America that can be proven. And it's not a conspiracy theory. There's nothing conspiratorial about what's going on presently. From with my eyes, they're just gaslighting white people and just playing with their, with their emotions.
I'm with you. Well, I am seeing other signs. You know, the COVID has definitely stirred up the entire Western world. And I was talking to a German friend of mine the other day, and we were talking about Germany, because he always says to me, he's said to me for years and years, he said to me, there's no hope for Germany, no hope for Germany. And then the other day he was saying to me, there's a guy in Russia, a German in Russia, who you're aware of, Mike King and his anti-New York Times.
Yes.
Now, there's a German now living in Russia, and he's got a website called anti-spiegel.ru. And Spiegel is, of course, the Jewish-owned, call it New York Times of Germany. And he was saying,
don't say, Jan. You don't say that Der Spiegel is also owned by Jews.
Yes. And so he was saying that, and I went to the guy's website, nice website, and he's functioning from Russia. And according to my German friend, this guy is taking everything Der Spiegel does and rewriting it and whacking them. And yeah, so there's a little bit of movement even on the German front, you know, because to me it's like the last people that they want to see awakening is Germany, you know. And
oh yeah,
can I take it on that? I will stay away, like miles away from anything that even slightly is close to Russia. It's not funny. I mean, I don't know why the people that never had contacts with the Bolsheviks or the Russians in general like them. But in reality, if you know how Bolshevism works, infiltration of the so-called opposition is their first goal. And this guy could write, I don't know even what he's writing, but let me put you a think about it. They, and go maybe we are transferring to the next part, they, like in the 40s and the 50s, they had a plan that basically the Third Reich prevented. Their plan was to overrun Western Europe. And by Western Europe, I mean France, including even in their wild dreams, they wanted to capture Britain. But they actually wanted to take the Middle East and North Africa. Why? Because this is part of their expansionist plans. It looks like, from all sources that I'm gathering, it looks like they want to play again this card, like using the very uninformed Western Europeans and very naive, honestly, and Americans. Honestly, I was struck by the numbers of Americans that like the Russians without knowing anything about them.
That's true. Like white nationalists in America generally have a favorable opinion of Russia. They don't have a really bad opinion of Russia, and they see them as sort of an ally against the Tsar.
We discussed in the beginning about the doxing and how things that you can do, and I am not aware. I'm pretty sure that maybe I must stay away from the topics like Holocaust being in EU, and also about my opinion what we must do with the non-whites and things like that. So I will stay silent. But in the information from Russia, back in 2015, I've joined a group of, I suppose, Ukrainian nationalists and also Russian exiles in Ukraine that were with a pro-white, or I must say, national socialist views. And because of, let's say, common history of civilization, let's say, the basis of the Russian is based on old Bulgarian, basically. I can understand them. So the things that the guy said, and said, talking about intelligent people, not about average hooligan fans or something like that, were quite shocking for me. One of the things that they said, that a guy, 15-year-old teenager, posted in the... I don't remember, is that in Facebook or is that in a Russian variant, which was VK, right? Vkontakte. Yeah. So he posted a picture of Adolf Hitler in some context with the war in Ukraine, right? These motherfuckers, the Russians, sent equivalent of the American... I don't know what will be police commando force or something like that. And they broke his
SWAT team.
Yes, SWAT team. Thank you. And they broke his apartment, and he was sentenced in some basically fast procedure case. And this guy, because he's 15 years old, I mean, what the fuck, man? I mean, even if he was posting pictures of Adolf Hitler, this doesn't make him a really fanatical national socialist. At least I don't think so that the 15 years old teens are like that. So this guy was sent in a prison, really in a prison, which by the way, just saying that some guys being older, also Russians, citing about interesting cases in Russia since the time when Putin took the power, because there was before he came to power, which I believe was 1999 or 2000. I'm not sure about that, but I believe it's 1999. So before that, there was a quite strong pro-nationalist and pro-national socialist movements in Russia. And since then, they were totally destroyed, infiltrated. A lot of the people that were not agents, because it looks like a lot of these people that formed this movement were agents of these Nazbols or call them as you want. There was a quite interesting case. For example, one of the guys that fought in east of Ukraine, one of the guys was a former leader of so-called SS or a Slavic Union. Let's put it as Slavyansky Soyuz. This guy basically turned to 180 degrees and he fought being a leader of a basically Jewish unit fighting on the side of the Bolsheviks in the eastern Ukraine. It's mind-blowing.
It's very confusing over there. We don't get any reliable information over here in America because, like, the left, the so-called left, I'm hesitant to say anything, you know, the neoliberal left, whatever you want to call them. They use it as sort of a straw man. They use the whole Russian thing to say that, you know, Russians have rigged the election. They use Russia as a scapegoat. So I think that's why many people over here and, like, you know, on this side say, well, if, like, these neoliberals are using Russia as a means of kind of a scapegoat for election rigging, then they must be okay. You know, they must be all right. We don't get a lot of details about over on this side of the pond about Russia.
I can add a few things as well, Georgi, before you return to that. I noticed among some of my American friends, especially the Christians, that they were talking about how Putin and Russia is now Christian. And so, and he's Christian, and he's going to save Russia, and he's going to save America, etc. But I know that Putin is a commie from the time of the KGB, and also there are the possible links. He seems to have some kind of Jewish links as well, a bit there. But I mean,
oh really?
Yeah.
But Putin is, for example, a guy who longs for the Soviet Union to be back. And this, where I can identify with that is us in Southern Africa fighting against Russia and China. And I assure you, Russia and China in the Cold War, bad news. And those Russians were busy. The Russians helped the blacks. They armed the blacks to the teeth to kill us, and they trained them and taught them and the
really?
Chinese. Oh, yes, the very, you know, our liberation wars in Southern Africa was totally against Russia and China. The whites of Southern Africa were fighting Russians and Chinese. Rhodesians and South Africans, especially the South Africans, killed some Russians and Chinese too, officers and so forth. Their people were big time active, and in Southern Africa, KGB and Russian stuff was very active here. There was so much going on here. You know, Russian submarines were dropping off blacks on the coastline, armed as terrorists. They were sending shiploads of arms and ammunition, heavy equipment, tanks, artillery, aircraft. I mean, the whole war in Southern Africa, the Russians and Chinese were number one there.
Was that, Jan, if I may ask, was that for the propagation of, like, communism
well,
or the Soviet hegemony? in Africa, or what was there any other ulterior purpose to that?
Let me just explain. In the time of the Soviet Union, thanks to all the other crazy stuff that the British and Americans got up to at the end of World War II, with the Eastern Europeans like our friend Nordlux and all those people ending up in the Warsaw Pact and all that, the Soviet Union had the Warsaw Pact, which was Eastern Europe plus China, and the original deal was to conquer the world. After World War II, the Soviet Union and the Chinese were out to conquer the world. But the original drive was in the time of the 1920s already, with a thing called the Comintern, the Communist International. And the goal was to put a communist, the goal was to put a communist party in every country in the world. That was the goal. And the Jews were busy, you know, and they were trying this in Europe, in Hungary, in Spain, in Germany, in Italy, except for the good guys who beat them back in Spain, Italy, and Germany. But after World War II, they were so pumped up with technology and their German weapons, American stuff. You know, America sent such vast amounts of equipment to Russia in World War II. You will not believe the amount of stuff they got. They got aircraft by the thousands. I'm not sure if they got something like, I stand to be corrected, but I think the Soviets got something like 18,000 aircraft from America in World War II. The entire Luftwaffe was only 12,000 aircraft. And these were just the aircraft that the Americans gave to them. Russia was so pumped up on weapons, plus they had captured German weapons, plus they had thousands of captured German scientists. They went on a worldwide campaign to try and conquer the world. And that is where things like the war in Vietnam, the Korean War, and in Africa, the KGB was so busy, the KGB and the Chinese. The Russians and Chinese worked together, and but the KGB was very active. And they went all across the West, the European empires, including the British Empire, and they sowed the seeds for communism everywhere. And a lot of these blacks and Asians who became independent states were actually, a lot of them were communists. In Africa, everybody was a communist. They tried Latin America, they tried South America. They were all over the show. That's where Cuba became communist. And there were wars fought all over the world in the time of the Cold War. And nowadays, people say, oh, the Cold War, nothing happened. No, let me tell you, in the Cold War, a lot of stuff happened that you don't know about. And so in Southern Africa, in Africa, the people like the British who controlled most of Africa, they just handed over Africa and just fled for the hills. But when you had like the French and the Portuguese and the South Africans and the Rhodesians fighting against black rule, that's where the communists really came in big time. And they brought in their military people and their intelligence people. I mean, there were KGB agents that were caught in South Africa, man. There was full-on warfare and struggle between the KGB and the South Africans and the Rhodesians. There were bases. The Chinese had bases in what is now Tanzania. It used to be German East Africa. No, there was hectic stuff. The communists were fully at work during the so-called Cold War. The only difference was that America and Europe and Britain left the whites of Southern Africa on their own. They weren't going to come and arm us up. And so it was just us against the Chinese and the Russians and the blacks. But they came here in big number. They spent billions and billions on getting the blacks to defeat us. And the way that it worked was the blacks were told, listen, we're going to give you weapons for free and we're going to train you. But the deal is that when you come to power, you are going to be communist and you're going to be pro-Russia, pro-China. And in certain cases, the Russians would back one one group of blacks, and in other cases, the Chinese would back another group of blacks. So sometimes, like in Rhodesia, you had two black armies. One was backed by the Russians, backed and trained by the Russians. The other one was backed and trained by the Chinese. And it varies in different countries. There was, in the case of Mozambique, where the Portuguese were, I think the blacks were only backed by the Chinese. In Angola, there were multiple ones. Some were backed by the Russians, some by the Chinese, some by the Americans. The Americans actually backed a group of blacks who'd been responsible for the genocide of Portuguese in Angola. America gave them guns and stuff. Now there was everybody was busy dealing with the blacks and these little armies and training them and so on. There was nobody on the side of the whites, I can tell you. But Georgi,
never knew that.
But Nordlux, I must tell you, I do share that nasty view of the Russians. We know about the Russians being nasty, sneaky, and so forth. So you carry on. You tell us more.
Maybe not the people, though. I mean, maybe the people, because I've heard. I've never directly talked to any activist over there, but I've heard that like legitimate activists over there, you know, legitimate nationalists are always jailed by Putin. That was the common complaint I've had. I just wanted to interject that. I don't know overall, though, the whole situation over there.
The people overall are brainwashed pro-USSR Bolsheviks. Most of them. They are celebrating every year basically the mass rape of Eastern Europe and Germany. And they are very proud, they are very proud of being descendants of this so-called Victory Day veterans, so basically Den Pobedy, 9th of May. So even in the Russian nationalist circles, like white nationalists, national socialists, they call this Pobedobesie, so basically means something like victory madness, because they're spreading this thing like this is the most important thing of the Russian identity, of being these so-called liberators of Eastern Europeans and even Germans. They're so arrogant in their lies that they're saying that they liberated Germany from the evil Nazis.
And didn't Germans get expelled in parts of Russia around this time period, like the Volga Russians?
There are a lot of.
I mean, no, the Volga Germans. I mean,
but they moved a lot of people around. I mean, this is a very typical Roman or Byzantium tactic or imperial tactic that the Russians use. They're moving people. And this is not only in Jewish society. This is also Imperial Russia. They're moving people around. And the idea is that if you are not attached to the earth, you can very barely create some kind of a resistance against the imperial rule. So this is nothing new. I mean, Russians are basically viewing themselves like Rome, and this globalist project, they are not nationalist really. Their globalist project that they are creating, people like Dugin, is basically recreating the Byzantium Empire. Like with new terms, of course, they will call it some kind of Eurasian alliance or some BS like that. But the ideas are basically recreating the Byzantium Empire with all the multi-culti, multi-racial BS, including Christianity. There was a very funny story from one of the channels, Russian channels that I followed, that basically in a certain city in the European part of Russia, by the way, where supposedly they had the better infrastructure, there were no fucking toilets in the schools. There were several truths, and there were no fucking inner toilets in the buildings of the schools. And because Russia is quite a cold country, the kids were forced to go outside in the winter, minus, let's say, 20 degrees Celsius or something like that. But in the same city, they're building like four big churches.
I'll tell you something. Sorry for interjecting. I'll tell you something I came across that bothered me. You know, in Hitler's table talk, Hitler talks about how many times Christianity teams up with communism. And I came across mention in recent years that it was as if, this was my impression, it was as if communism was collapsing in Russia. And then the communists and the Christian church struck a deal. And it's like the Christians agreed to get the people, the masses, to support the communists and say, you know, we must live together and blah, 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 and don't try to overthrow the government, etc. That is a kind of a sense that I got, that there's this deal between Christianity and the communists. Because just like you say in Bulgaria is still being run by commies who were commies previously, and the same is true for Russia and a lot of Eastern Europe, is that a lot of the same old people are still running it. They just don't call themselves communists. They just use another term.
Who is running, Kanzlerin of Germany? She's communist.
Yes, Merkel, the Jewish... Merkel, she's Polish-Jewish. And who was it? Somebody told me, a German told me, that Merkel studied, I'm not sure if she studied at like one of those universities in Russia. And you know what she studied? She studied agitation, like political agitation. That was her topic.
Not very surprised. Not very surprised. I mean, Merkel, there was a pictures of Merkel visiting the communist Bulgaria back in the time, and because supposedly she's a chemist, right? Like my parents. And she was very interesting. I mean, most of the students were dressed, whatever, but she was from head to toe with her uniform. And usually you can see this type of people, even in Bulgaria, with their very highly indoctrinated communists. Not to mention that, yes, I've heard from my German friends that there are very possible Polish-Jewish connections there in her family tree. And not to mention that, if I'm not mistaken, her family basically escaped from Western Germany to Eastern Germany, which is kind of ridiculous if you think about what is going on at the time. I mean, the people were running from Eastern Germany, were escaping Eastern Germany and trying to go to supposedly more free Western Germany. And it was, free compared to Eastern Germany, right? Because in Eastern Germany, you can, let's put it that way, you can be sent to a concentration camp, or even worse, to a hospital, or basically a madhouse, because at some point the communists change the strategy, so to say. They try to convince the people that the resistant fighters, the oppositions to the communists, were mad, right? So you can be sent to basically...
I don't want to defend the USSR, Eastern Germany per se, but I mean, a lot of the arguments I've seen from people is they're saying that this kind of hermetically sealed these populations away from Western degeneracy, from America. You don't agree?
This is... No.
I'm just saying that's the common argument I've heard about Eastern Germany and also the USSR.
Everything that you had, we had it, but it was a little bit, how to say, more, let's say, hidden.
They also say it preserved the demographics better.
No, it's not like that. It is the common problem with these very smart analyzers and wooden philosophers, I'll say, as we use this term in Bulgaria, that they're reading some book written by some other moron that is reading some data that is most likely twisted by the communists, and they are not really
Communists per se. It comes from a lot of people that are supposedly on this side. They say that USSR and Eastern Germany.
It doesn't fucking matter, okay, because they are not analyzing the sources, and only sources on the ground could, how to say, see what is the situation, could make you see what is the situation on the in Eastern Europe. I often make example with the Bulgarian Communist Party, how they started population replacement, basically.
Really?
How they really? Started population replacement, and that's why we have around 1 million and a half non-whites in Bulgaria from population that is, of course, they're hiding the numbers. This is what I'm telling all the time, that they're hiding the numbers, they're twisting the history, and they're creating all kinds of BS like coronavirus and certain genocidal events in history, let's put it that way. It's just the short story is they took the land of the people, so they nationalized the land. They nationalized, and by the way, just saying, communists in Bulgaria, they were the most hardline communists after the Soviet hardline communists. Why is that?
No,
I have certain suggestions, but one of the reasons is that they wanted a very strong grip over Bulgaria, because it was basically the end of their eastern, or I say southeastern flank in Europe. And that's why you must look at the, from geostrategical perspective, it was the crossroad of the Balkans, which was a NATO member, a very strong army. Next to us, Yugoslavia or Judeoslavia, it's a very interesting case, run for a very long time by both double Soviet and British agent, aka Tito. And very, very interesting, very, very interesting political situation. So what the communists did in Bulgaria, they took the land, they took the cattle, they took the private owned factories, and they melted together the land in agricultural cooperations. Now, there were very few places for the people to live from these agricultural cooperations. Let's say this caused a very large number of Bulgarians to be forced, basically, even though not by force really, but by you don't have any source of income, right, and don't have food. So they moved to the biggest, to the cities. This caused a rising number of people in the cities. And the idea was to create basically proletariats, profs, because they wanted factories. Now, they created this thing, and at some point there was a gap in the, in the population between the villages and the cities. There were a rising number of people living in the city and a small number of people living in the villages. And take in mind that Bulgaria was agricultural population, mostly. Like most of Europe, maybe with the exception of, but I believe even in the Third Reich, they had predominantly agricultural population with predominantly peasant population, so to say, and less population in the city. And take it mind that Germany was the most industrialized country, maybe after that was Britain and France, right? We're talking about Western Europe. So they changed the demographics, and they noticed, which I believe it's on purpose because they were following the orders from USSR. They are not really smart to notice what is going on really. We're talking about very, let's say, not educated people. And these communists, our Bulgarian communists, they start to think about replacement of the population. I mean, somebody must go and work in the fucking farms, right? To provide food in the villages. What they did, they started to bring gypsies from Romania and from Greece. A very interesting case, because Greece supposedly was, part of the capitalist bloc, right? But they were, quite open to get rid of their gypsies, which, by the way, I believe were actually Turkish gypsies. They came from Anatolia. So they opened the borders for unknown numbers of gypsies. I know the numbers only, I believe, in 1953, for example. They said that for 1 year, something like 4,000 families from Greek origin, so-called Greek origin, moved to Bulgaria. Now, 4,000 families could be everything from, I don't know, maybe 40,000 to even maybe 80,000 men, because gypsy families, they are just like horde of orcs. You don't know how many hominids are counted in one family, but they usually had a lot of people. But this is only for 1 year. Now, I had some data of Bulgarian gypsies in Bulgaria. Take in mind that Bulgaria, before the end of the Second World War, was in bigger territory. And it looks like the gypsies before 1945 was something like, in different data, but between 20 to 40,000 men. So something happened in the modern day to have these 1.5 million Turks in gypsies. Now, what happened? In reality, they replaced the population. They give them land. They give them a lot of benefits, totally for free, right? Because they wanted to integrate them. And, of course, they started to send them to the factories. They were shit factory workers, which caused the problems. Of course, there was a reaction against that on the local level. And a lot of gypsies actually were not sent anymore to really important factories and stuff. Because, for example, my father was, in chief of some of the smaller production units in the local refinery, and they just didn't want gypsies there because they're important and very expensive machines. And the gypsies, as most of the hominids, are not really smart and skilled workers. So this is my take on the so-called based communism. Not to mention that the communists, actually, I still remember as a kid, I'm born 1983, so I was something like 6-7 years old when the communism so-called failed, right? I remember that there was a propaganda posters of communist workers all around the world that were from all races that hugging and kissing each other, and there are a lot of basically events that were held in Bulgaria that were multicultural, multiracial events. Like there was a folk festival or song festival that were held, and basically all the Negroes from Cuba came to dance and sing. And they, the communists, were quite okay with Cuban Negroes going and even raping Bulgarian girls. They were not really a problem with that. They had no problems with Vietnamese that they brought here because we must help them because the evil Americans destroyed their wonderful country, right? And they brought them here. And what happened? The same thing. Criminality raises up. Vietnamese were notorious for their... how to put it politically correct? Non-human behavior, maybe, is the correct term. basically, they were known, and basically, even the Bulgarian commies were forced to separate them in separate quarters because the Vietnamese were basically just eating cats and dogs all around, stealing people. Absolutely ridiculous stuff. So all this bullshit with base communism, maybe in Bulgaria there's a private case, but I'm pretty sure that in the USSR, the Russians were talking, the Russian nationalists were talking two different names of the Russians. So basically, one is called Russian Reich, Russian, right? And the other is called basically Sovka, so basically Soviet. And they said that this political entity that the communists created is basically Sovka, so basically Soviets. They are not Russians.
Yes.
Because they don't know what race it is, what is the nationality, what they're going on. Maybe in the European parts of Russia there was not much race mixing, but in the rest of the country there are a lot of mixed marriages. So I don't know how the fuck these people are talking about things that they don't understand. They're talking some basically communist propaganda bullshit. The same thing of people that are defending Yugoslavia, like some this great country. That this is exactly example how the things must be, right? I mean, let's mix together the people and we call them nationalists. And, yeah, the base Tito. Well done.
I can interject a little bit. I've got a Bulgarian. There's a small Bulgarian community here in South Africa, and Patrick, this might give you some idea of the difference between communism in the time of the Soviet Union and the modern world. There is a big difference. I've got a friend who lives here, who came here after communism broke down. And she said when she first came to South Africa, which was the 1990s, she couldn't believe how many shops there were. And she couldn't believe how many products were in these shops. She said she'd never seen anything like it in her life in Bulgaria. And she actually loves multicultural, multiracial South Africa. And then she says to me, she totally loves South Africa. She says, South Africa is fantastic. She's a South African. And then when I say to her, when I spoke to her about race, she said to me, no, in the time of communism, they were taught there's no such thing as race, you know. And she's quite a bit older than Nordlux, but that is what she told me herself, out of her own mouth. And so she doesn't believe in race, and it's the one thing of communism that she still hangs on to. So I can quite believe everything that Nordlux is telling you, and you know. The Soviet Union and Eastern Europe, you can't compare it with West Germany and the Western world and America. It was a different kind of a life. They were pretty nasty. They were tough, boy. You know, everything that they attribute to Hitler, oh, Hitler was so terrible. Hitler did this, Hitler did that. Go find out what the commies did. Commies didn't fuck around, my friend. They didn't bugger around. I'm sure Nordlux can tell you more.
I could go in the direction of, if we still have time, of course, about thing that I'm trying to to red pill the people, to inform them. Because from my perspective, from all the things that we receive, like data and like, let's say, intelligence, enough people to create our own nationalist opinion about that. For all the things that we see, the Russians were preparing for the basically, their revenge, or the Bolshevik, if you will, or the Nazbols, because they are not exactly like the communists that were in the 100 years ago. They are preparing for their revenge against America. Well, and against Western Europe. So basically, they want to repeat basically. Yeah, you want to say
sorry,
something?
Sorry, let me quickly say it before I forget it. There was a woman I knew who was married to a Jewish woman married to a very wealthy Afrikaans guy here in Johannesburg, and for a time they were quite good friends with me. And one day, the man told me a very strange thing. He was a total believer in business and capitalism and all that. He told me that he came up with some kind of idea. I can't remember what this idea was anymore. But he came up with some kind of idea, and he went to Russia. And this happened in the last 20 to 25 years. He went to Russia. He went to go and meet top Russian military officers in a particular city. He actually told me an interesting thing, by the way. He said that in the city that he went to, it had 1 million people in it, and all of those 1 million people were involved in doing one task only: building nuclear missiles. The entire city exists just for that. That's all they do, build nuclear missiles. And he went and he met these generals, and he proposed his business/military, whatever idea it was. And he told me that those Russian generals have a hatred of America like you cannot believe. He says they hate America with a passion. And that pretty much ties up with our Southern African experience with these people. These people are not the friends of America and not the friends of the West. Anyway, that's my story.
There is a certain Bulgarian, I would say, because we started with why the America allowed the destruction of the, and of course the Brits. I mean, the Brits basically gave up the country, their empire. Why is that? If you look at the map of the world, basically it was a Soviet communist pincer maneuver, including Bulgaria. Bulgaria was pumping out high-quality weapons to these hominids there. One of the nasty communist agents were bragging, I heard the interview something like, I don't know, 5-10 years ago, and they were bragging that they're pumping up something like 1 million AK-47 only for the Bush War. You know much better about me about the Bush War and what happened there. So, I can imagine one of the things was basically the pincer maneuver against Europe, but also Africa is very rich on materials.
Unbelievably so.
And I remember, if I remember correctly, only in South Africa, there are a number of materials that are used in the rocket industry and that were basically exported to America. So basically, if you have a communist hominid rule over South Africa, like you had now, right? You have America without a source of important minerals. You don't have enough, and of course the other source, the other monopoly of minerals and metals is China. That's why the Chinese expanding like there is no tomorrow in Africa. And don't to understand me correctly, I'm not afraid of the Russians. I'm afraid of the Chinese, because there is a forming alliance between Russia, Turkey, China, and all these I'd say, strange, let's say, Turkic-speaking countries that were part of USSR back in the time. Now they want to be part of Turkey, Turkish alliance. Now, this is against the interest of China, because if they had this alliance, they will be very powerful country. At least they will cover a very, I mean, look at Kazakhstan, Tajikistan, Turkmenistan, and all these countries that are speaking Turkic Turkish languages, right? And if these countries united in some way or another, there will be a problem for China, because they will have the wine of, I mean, the Silk Road. Basically, most of the Silk Road will be passing through these countries. And the old Silk Road is basically the modern road of trading, and the modern road of the transportation of oil and gas. So who is the mediator between Turkey, these ex-USSR countries, and China? Russia. Russians, like the beloved, I don't know why it's beloved in America, bearded piece of shit, Dugin. Dugin was, if I remember correctly, 2015 in Turkey, exactly when this failed coup d'etat happened in Turkey. What he was looking for, we don't know, but the official version is that he met Pan-Turkists that are living in Turkey. Now, this is very interesting, because the based Europeans that are sucking up everything that came from the Russians, like this guy that were writing something anti-Jewish in Russia, but he's based. I will think about this thing twice, actually, because if they are sentencing 15 years old for posting pictures of Adolf Hitler in Russia, how the fuck they will stand behind a guy, or at least leave him alone, a guy that is posting such anti-Semitic stuff in Russia. I don't know, just suspicion. But let me continue. So Dugin met with Pan-Turkis, and interestingly enough, this coup d'etat, this is very interesting, against Erdogan, failed, and the official data of the media, and the media, as we know, they're presenting always very flat version of the history. So basically, the coup d'etat just was fake. It was created, according to the media, by Erdogan for some political purposes. Well, 5 years later, when you look at the things around, it looks like these people that tried the coup d'etat against Erdogan were supported by CIA. And it looks like CIA again failed. They're not very successful these days, your guys. And they wanted to create basically a regime, military regime, that is so-called pro-European, pro-American, and to cancel the connection in Turkey and Russia. You Google financial relations between Turkey and Russia, you'll see that the Russians are pumping enormous amount of money. We're talking about billions and billions and billions of dollars in the Turkish economy. If you look at the white nationalists or the nationalists in Europe, they believe that Russia is Orthodox, a based country, and they will fight and help their Orthodox, especially the Serbs, right? So based Russians and Serbs always together, Slavs and all this bullshit. They will fight against the Turks, but they are still pumping this money. So I'm not absolutely sure how the fuck it's working that the based Russians are helping Ottoman Turkey, basically, because Erdogan said many times that Turkey wants to be.
But isn't Turkey also propped up by Israel as well? Don't they also have alliances with Israel?
They had alliances with Israel, and the overall the the population of Turkey is overall anti-Semitic, if we are honest.
I mean, they may be, but they still, really? the government, so...
Well, Erdogan is accusing some people of being Mossad agents and things like that. And, of course, there was a very interesting case that his political opponent, I believe in 2010, accused Erdogan of being a Jew, which caused... And he escaped in America, by the way. And Erdogan was pissed off and he basically sentenced this guy. And if he's captured and sent to Turkey, he will stay in some of their prisons. That, I suppose, it's not a very pleasant experience. So... I'm very, very suspicious that these alliances, these Eurasian alliances, basically are forming against Europe. And yes, the Europeans, our weaklings that are leading the European Union, they want to form a European army, because they look that the analysis is that at some point America will be destabilized, like we are going to that moment, and they will leave NATO. If NATO is without America, then the second most powerful army in NATO is Turkey. European armies are generally underarmed, with a few numbers, and they somehow expect basically America to take the defense of Europe against Russia, basically. It's not like Europeans don't have the technologies. It is like that there is no political will to use the technologies, to weaponize the technologies, and also there is no resources. There is no resources in Europe. And we are going back to this pincer maneuver that the Soviets did back in the time.
Was
Africa back before the Second World War? The Africa was basically colonies of Europe.
Yes. Now let me ask you the question. You're saying there's a lack of resources. You mean physical resources, like the resources of Africa, the mines and the things?
Yes.
Europe is short of physical resources. That's what you are saying. Now that is an interesting topic, because I myself have been thinking about this topic for a long time. I've got a book. A book that's a thorough analysis of empires and what makes them succeed and what makes them fail. Now listen to this, and it goes back all the way to the Spanish Empire and everything. And in this big thick book, which analyzed empires in the last 500 years, the conclusion of it was that the nations or the big empires that win are the ones who've got natural resources and big land area. And if you look at the world situation, Canada's got a lot of resources. Canada's a big country. America's got lots of resources, tons of stuff also hidden away in Alaska, big physical area. Russia, enormous country, lots of physical resources. And then you get Europe, big population, very few resources. And it puts Europe at a total disadvantage. Whereas, as you say, 100 years ago, Europe controlled not only the physical resources of Africa, but often even way into Asia and South America, etc. So Europe has technology, it's got people, it's got the IQ, but Europe doesn't have fucking resources. And that can put Europe at a huge disadvantage. You're the only person that I've come across, Nordlux, that understands this. And this to me is a very important topic. The loss of Africa and chunks of Africa for Europe is huge. And I mean, you got the stupid British. They lost their whole fucking empire. They had lots of access to everything. They've lost it. And you've got all these dummies sitting here who control some of the greatest resources on Earth. The value of the resources is beyond imagination. And the Europeans don't have access to it. And yeah, if I may add another thing, when you talk about Europe doesn't have the political will, to me, when I look at Europe, there's absolutely, Europe is the number one superpower on Earth. There is no reason why Europe should not be the number one superpower in the world, even stronger than America. But notice how weird it is that, if you go back 100 and more years, you'll see that European armies and navies were all over the planet. And nowadays, we find ourselves sitting and saying, oh, can Europe defend itself? Europe can't defend itself. But just 75 years ago, Germany was busy, invading Russia and tearing into Russia. The notion that Europe cannot defend itself is complete garbage. It has the manpower, it's got the everything. The only thing it lacks is resources. But when you say there's no political will, that also tells me the politicians are not the friends of the people of Europe. Definitely not.
Of course, because they're communist leftist degenerates, Masons, including Absolutely. The people that are supposedly based, like this Hungarian guy. That supposedly is based, right?
Viktor Orban.
Viktor Orban. The last scandal was with a member of his party that was fervent against gay marriages, right? And by the way, just saying, Orban is very close, including financially.
He's also a pro-Zionist.
He's pro-Zionist, but the only thing that they said about him is that he's anti-Semitic because, you see, he had some problems with Soros, right? This is the main reason that he's anti-Semitic. If you are against one Jew, you're against all Jews. But in the same time, he is a very good friend with Netanyahu. And he's investing money. And you can check this thing out. I'm not making this info. He's investing enormous amount of money, or at least good amount of money, not enormous, it's like America investing in Holocaust museums, but a good amount of money in anti-Semitic fund in Europe. So they're fighting anti-Semitism in Europe with the money of this based guy. And also Viktor Orban, a member of his political party was caught, and he was against gay marriages, as I said. He was caught and this is recently, this is something like 2-3 weeks ago, he was caught in a gay orgy in Brussels. So he's against the legalization of gay marriages, but he's also degenerate. And the same thing is with the people that are very close to Putin. They always will say things that will refer to the more traditional Russians and to more traditional people overall. And they will stick to these words because they just don't understand that these people are professional liars. They are not only liars, they are disinfo agents. And the same thing... one of the Russians that I followed, one of his channel, he pointed out that there are very deep pedo ring and homosexual ring around Putin. And of course, his two very close associates, the brother Grimberg, which of course Jews, and all these people that supporting Putin, They just don't realize what is going on, obviously. And of course, there is another thing coming, the based Orthodox Church in Russia. The based Orthodox Church in Russia is basically a mafia structure. that had a legal permission to trade with alcohol and cigarettes, which means that you are making a lot of money, especially in Russia, if you know what I mean. And they are not paying any taxes. And the leader of this organization, the patriarch, right, he is very often followed with watches that cost something like $100,000, $200,000, if you know what I mean. And this organization, the Russian Orthodox Church, they're building, they had some kind of hidden, contract with the Bolsheviks, with the Nazbols, right? To spread the old retardation of Rabbi Yeshu, and this will calm down the goyim. That's why in Russia, when the Corona Murona started, the churches basically supported the opinion of the state. So there was some guys, I suppose, like in Bulgaria, that they claimed that Rabbi Yeshu miraculously will protect you from the virus, right? With the power of eternal Jewishness, he will fight off the virus. But they succumbed to the agenda of the state, because they are not independent. And you must understand that the Orthodox churches all over the world, they practice Caesaro papism, which means that the Caesar rule over the patriarch. It is not like in Western Europe where the Pope rule over the kings, which is also bullshit, by the way. But this is what it is. It's just the communists realize that it's stupid to destroy the Orthodox churches when you can use their agenda and use it against the people. And I could go in that direction basically endlessly, but let's put it that way, that the most of the Bulgarian higher-ranking patriarchs of the church looks like they had dossiers in the Bulgarian secret services. I mean, the secret services during the time of communism. So they were elected on their places by the communist church. And they really, really were basically agents that were sent abroad and gave the communist Bulgarians and KGB, because they're all the same, important info about the situation in the countries that they're practicing, because there are Bulgarian diaspora all over the world, right? In the Western countries, I mean. So it's just another of these things that the people are taking totally wrong, and that they just don't analyze, because they don't have the sources or the brain power to do anything against the subversion. So this is my analysis. Very, I can go in about.
Well,
I can go with the.
Finish.
I can go with the Russian plan that one of the guy spread it around the year 2010, but maybe we can leave it for another time.
Okay.
Because it will take some time.
We can revisit Russia. Very interesting stuff. I do understand about churches being spy organizations as well. I heard that out of out of the mouth of a Boer who was in the military intelligence. So yeah, very interesting. Are there any final comments, I think, on any of these topics? Anyone want to say anything before we go?
Nothing. I appreciate it. Thank you for bringing me on, Jan. Appreciate it a lot. And wish you nothing but success over in South Africa and your continual struggle.
Well, thank you very much for being on the show. We will definitely keep you on the list for future shows. And thank you very much for both your input, Nordlux and Patrick. I think we had some very interesting discussions here. And we can easily pick up on these again. And very interesting to hear stuff from Eastern Europe with the links to Russia. because that gives us a unique perspective. And it does tie up with some of the things that we've run into over here. We were very, you know, the Russians are not the friends of Europe, eh? And one could make the same argument about Britain, but let me not go there. So thank you very much, guys. We'll be chatting again.
Thank you.
Thank you, and hail victory.
These are my websites, historyreview.com, africancrisis.info, and white-shop.biz. This is my attempt to try and do some Jew-free trading and experimenting with the next level of stuff. So, thank you very much for listening. We'll be chatting again soon. Take care of yourselves.